So hello everyone and welcome to another edition of the INSS podcast. Today we'll be speaking about the changing perceptions with respect to the international organizations and global governance and how this affects Israel. So my name is Michal Chatuel-Radoshitsky. I'm a research fellow here at INSS, and with me in the studio today is Colonel Advocate Pnina Sharvit Baruch, I should say in reserves. Pnina is a senior research fellow here at INSS and the head of the program on law and national security. And among other things, and relevant to this podcast, of course, our listeners should know that Pnina headed the International Law Department in the IDF. So one thing common to Pnina and myself is that we both research and look at the UN as an interesting arena for international events. And given the recent developments in the UN, particularly the 73rd General Assembly, I want to ask you, Pnina, about the United States President, President Trump, his words about the International Criminal Court, where he said that, and this is, I quote, "The ICC has no jurisdiction, no legitimacy, and no authority." So I want to ask you, Pnina, specifically, because we know that in the ICC now there's a preliminary examination being held with regard to Israel. And perhaps before we relate to that in specific, let me ask you if you could please enlighten our listeners as to what the preliminary examination relates to vis-a-vis Israel and what its current status is. And from there, we'll move on to additional questions.
Okay, so just first, a quick word about what is the International Criminal Court, or the ICC. So it's a relatively new court. It started operating in 2002, and it's meant to bring to justice individuals suspected of the commission of war crimes, crimes against humanity, genocide, and aggression. Now, in principle, the jurisdiction of the court covers only crimes carried out by in the territory or by the citizens of member states, meaning states that are party to the Rome Statute that created the court, and Israel is not. Nor is the US, so that should have been, we should have been fine with the court. However, the ICC prosecutor accepted Palestine as a state because they were defined as an observer state by the UN General Assembly, yes, in November 2012. Yes.
Yeah.
And following their request, she opened a preliminary examination into the situation in Palestine.
She is the prosecutor.
She's the prosecutor, yes. And this examination refers to Gaza, the West Bank, and East Jerusalem. Mm-hmm. Israel doesn't accept it, but this is the situation. There is a preliminary examination. The U.S. found itself under a preliminary examination of the prosecutor due to the fact that Afghanistan joined the court and is a member state, and therefore the actions of the U.S. in Afghanistan are also have also been reviewed. And there, it's even in a more, and there already there is a recommendation of the prosecutor to open an investigation. Because we have to understand, the procedure in the ICC, first, you don't immediately start an investigation. First, you have a preliminary examination, where they examine the situation in accordance with, say, open sources, any kind of review, reports by NGOs or by official organizations and states, even private people can refer any kind of material. And then the prosecutor examines whether to open an investigation. So we are in that stage. It is examining
so
whether...
So when you said there's an open investigation, is that against the United States in Afghanistan?
So in Afghanistan, the preliminary examination has been concluded and there is a recommendation to open an investigation, but the decision to open an investigation is of the pretrial chamber.
And
so
hang
we
on
are
a
still
sec.
Awaiting
so this,
their decision.
So this investigation, is it on a specific crime on a specific day or is it just in general?
So the examination refers to specific incidents. For example, in our case, it is examining with regard to Gaza mainly protective edge and all kinds of allegations of war crimes there of all sides concerned, by the way. It's not only of Israel and the IDF or in Afghanistan, only the U.S. and all the actors.
So the Palestinians
the
are also up for investigation.
Yes, and Hamas are also being investigated, examined. In our case, there's no investigation yet. There are also the West Bank and the settlements. The settlements are defined, or the definition of a war crime can cover perhaps the settlements. So the settlements are also being examined, and the house demolitions, for example, of Palestinians, all these are being examined.
But when
examined.
You say settlements, what in the settlements? The settlements that
in
being
itself,
built?
Okay. In itself, the policy of settlements, of transfer of the residents of the occupying power to the occupied territory in itself is defined as a war crime. So we have this examination. In our case, we are still in phase two out of four phases of the preliminary examination, because she still has to decide whether the court has jurisdiction.
So the preliminary examination, yes, even before the investigation, has four different,
yes,
categories or stages?
Okay. We are now in phase two, still examining the jurisdictional questions, because Israel claims that there's no jurisdiction, Palestine is not a state, it doesn't have a territory. Mm-hmm. That's still being examined. And also the specific situation themselves, of whether they are, the incidents are indeed fall within the definition of war crimes. They are also, the next phase is also to examine the complementarity element, which mm-hmm. means whether the state has a genuine investigation and is examining itself, and there is a genuine investigation in the state, then the court will not interfere. Mm-hmm. And also the issue
but
of gravity.
In Israel's case, yeah, the Israeli official policy is to expand settlements. So how can there, yeah, be, under the principle of complementarity, So how can you expect Israel to investigate itself?
Exactly. So the complementarity can only work with regard, for example, to protective edge. And there were all kinds of investigations into incidents. Mm-hmm. While on the settlements, complementarity will not help.
Yeah.
Another element is gravity, whether the case is serious enough. The ICC is not supposed to deal with any kind of breach of the law, mm-hmm, of war, even a war crime, but only on wide scale war crimes.
So that was the issue with the Marmara.
Exactly. With the flotilla, there the prosecutor decided not to proceed to an investigation because of gravity. It seems that it's not grave enough. The pretrial chamber overruled and said there is gravity, it's serious enough, but it was only a kind of recommendation, and the prosecutor re-evaluated decision, and she retained her position that there is no gravity.
So maybe this will also give us a sense. The Marmara issue, with the flotilla issue, was in 2010, right? It happened in 2010. We're in 2018 now. How long did this whole thing unfold?
The final decision of the prosecutor was I think last year. Uh-huh. So it took time.
Okay.
And the current preliminary examination will also take time. It's also an ongoing. Every new situation is still being examined. It begins from June 2014. Mm-hmm. But if there's something happens, for example,
like what's happening on the fence now.
Yes, exactly. So that also will be examined by the court. It's open ended. There's no end for this examination. And the decision, we will see what the decision will be.
So now we're in phase two, and then we need to move. So what's the? Can you just maybe a word about the difference between phase two, phase three?
So, for example, she's not yet examining gravity and complementarity. Uh-huh. She's still in the jurisdictional phase.
But in any case, in order to finish the preliminary examination, you need to go through all four stages.
Yes.
And only then you can arrive at some kind of a conclusion.
And then she can recommend or not if to open or decide if to open an investigation
or
not.
And even if she decides not to, then the pretrial chamber is another entity within the ICC that can overturn her decision.
They could appeal, as they did in the flotilla case there.
Is
and
it
they
common
could.
That they?
Well, there are not so many cases at the moment, but yes, they are. They do approach the pretrial chamber. Israel is again an example. And what we need to remember is that once there is an investigation, and if there are also already suspects, then the court can issue arrest warrants. And these must be respected by all member states. We have 123 states, all the Western states, South America, and many others that are party and to the Rome Statute, and they will have to detain and hand over to The Hague anybody that there is an arrest warrant about that person if they can come to their country. So this court has teeth.
Yeah,
that's why the U.S. is so concerned, and that's why Israel is so concerned. Mm-hmm. And I think what makes Israel now concerned also is that the pretrial chamber, also in the flotilla case, but also in a recent decision that it gave a ruling to approach and to establish a system of approaching potential victims in Palestine, something that an initiative that was not requested by the prosecutor, and they haven't done it in any other case, especially not in such a preliminary stage. So they gave this, I think, a little bit disturbing a decision to open this system, which makes Israel, I think, a little bit worried about whether we will see some bias against Israel also within the court.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I have a lot more to ask about the pre-trial chamber, but I think I do want to move forward to another international court, so to speak, and that's the ICJ, the International Court of Justice. And I know that last month in September, the Palestinians issued a complaint to the ICJ against American recognition of Jerusalem as the capital city of Israel and for transferring its embassy to the, what they call, well, disputed city, let's call it. So what power does the, so we spoke about the ICC, now let's move on to the ICJ. What power does the ICJ have and how does it differ from the ICC that we've just spoken about?
Yeah, so the ICJ is not a criminal court and it doesn't deal with individuals. It is a principal, the principal judicial organ of the United Nations, established in the UN Charter of 1945. It's a continuation of the previous court that was even beforehand. And it's supposed to settle disputes between states, but the states have to agree that the dispute will be settled. So they need to give their agreement. In this case, by the way, the agreement of the US stems from its adoption of the protocol to the Vienna Convention on Diplomatic Relations, where they agreed that any dispute regarding this convention can be brought to before the court. So that's how they have jurisdiction in this issue.
So it's not enough that you're a member of the UN. So you can be a member state of the UN, yeah, but you still have to give your consent for a matter to be discussed,
yes,
in the ICJ.
Either ad hoc or in the convention, in a specific convention. So this is the situation here. Still, I think the case, I don't think that the prospect of this application are very high. They are building some argument based on all kinds of articles in the Vienna Convention. There's no article in the Vienna Convention saying that you have to have your embassy inside the territory of the state. So it's, they're basing it on some kind of interpretation. It's also not clear that they are a state for the ICJ. The fact that the ICC ruled one case doesn't mean that this is a definite answer. And also, according to the jurisprudence of the ICJ, they will not rule on claims that involve the legal interests of third parties without the consent of these parties. And since Israel definitely has a major interest in this in these proceedings and it will not give its consent, yeah, so I think even just on that basis, I don't see this case going forward.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But if we are talking about the ICJ, so another interesting, first of all, another authority that they have is to give advisory opinions upon the request of UN organs. And they did that upon the request of the UN General Assembly in 2004. They gave an advisory opinion on the illegality of the wall or the fence with regard to Israel, that Israel was is building in the West Bank. And as far and this decision or this advisory opinion has impacted the major development in your research field regarding Israel's international delegitimization in general and the BDS movement in specific. So perhaps you, Michal, could shed some light on that development as another illustration of the power of international institutions.
Right. So our conversation actually helped me to understand the difference between the advisory opinion, because I wasn't aware of the intricate details. But yes, I do know, of course, that in 2004, the ICJ issued an advisory opinion on the security barrier or what is called the separation barrier or the wall or the apartheid wall. Any term has been used to describe this barrier. But yes, in 2004, the ICJ issued an advisory opinion regarding the fact that, or the opinion, that Israel should be held accountable to the Geneva Conventions and that states must withhold assistance from constructing the barrier. And perhaps I'm plugging back into your words about the teeth, right, of the ICC, because here we see in the ICJ, so there was an advisory opinion and fine, nothing really happened. But what
it's only a recommendation.
Exactly. So, yeah. So it's an opinion and yeah, it's left at that. But what did happen, and this perhaps really shows how soft power comes in here, because 1 year later, we saw how civil society wanted to perhaps resuscitate this advisory opinion. And then they formed what we term today, the BDS movement. So what happened is that in the 1 year anniversary to this ICJ ruling, opinion in 2004. So in July 2005, we see that 170 pro-Palestinian NGOs, non-government organizations, united behind a platform calling to boycott and divest from Israel and calling to impose sanctions on Israel. And actually stipulating three very detailed goals that until Israel complies with these goals, the state should be boycotted against. So the first goal was, of course, to give back all the occupied Arab lands, not necessarily differentiating between what an occupied Arab land is and what is not necessarily relating to the West Bank or the Gaza Strip, but just all occupied Arab lands, and dismantling the wall, that very same wall that was referred to in the 2004 ICJ advisory opinion. The second goal was to grant equal rights to all Palestinian citizens. Of course, we know that Israeli Arab citizens do receive equal rights before the law. And the third goal of the BDS movement was relating to UN Resolution 194 and the opinion that all Palestinian refugees have the right to return to their homes and territories. So having said that, this movement, obviously, as we know, over the years received a lot of traction and formed the base for the international diplomatic struggle against Israel, perhaps leveling out the asymmetry between Israel and the Palestinians with respect to the military and hard power that we saw that the ICC referred to. So here we see a completely different field where these institutions do have power and do affect what's happening on the ground vis-a-vis Israel, Israel's image.
So given the decade and a half which have passed since, say, that ruling, and this initiation of this process you were talking about, the current situation, I don't know if you see it as a success or a failure, of those calling to oust Israel internationally, and the military weaker side appeal to international institutions as an inherent part of the struggle that you just mentioned, do you think the legitimacy of these institutions has declined or will decline further to the nationalist or anti-globalist approach that President Trump outlines in his speech? Do you see now a shift in the amount of power that they have in the international field?
So it's interesting to note, really, let's really go back to the starting point of our conversation, which was Trump's speech. So he really kind of pitted isolationism or localism against globalization and universalism. But I don't think that we have to see these two values as very different or as negating trends, because I think that you can't really live in today's world without reflecting on how your deeds affect the international community and how the international community sees the way that you are handling your domestic affairs. So obviously there's a kind of give and take, and you know the world is watching, so to speak, and ICT, information communication technology, which obviously makes things more accessible, and you know, even at times I have a WhatsApp with my South African friends who are living in the United States, and I see and I converse with them more than my next door neighbor. So you really can't say that the world is now going towards localism and isolation. You can't be isolated in today's technology and given things today. But if you ask regarding the decline of international institutions, saying, and again going back to Trump's no jurisdiction, no legitimization claim regarding the ICC, I do see that there is actually an increase in the importance that states relate to both the ICC and the UN. If we look at the UN, for example, and here I'm going back to, let's look at our domestic affairs, let's look at what's happening in Israel. So I think that over the years, we've had a general kind of, the general psyche in Israel has been shmum, right? So Israel, the UN is some institution out there and we're not worried about it. And yeah, we can't be too concerned with it. But if you look now, even now, at what happened around Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's speech in the UN General Assembly last month, you know, there was a hype. Everyone was watching. It was all over the press. Everyone was speaking about it. So it's become a focus, an area of focus. People are interested. We want to see Ambassador, well, now outgoing United States Ambassador to the UN, Nikki Haley. She's celebrated here in Israel. Everyone knows who Nikki Haley is, you know, because the UN arena is important. If we look at Israel's strategy of Benjamin Netanyahu also spoke about it in his speech, that there's more diplomatic relations now with African countries. At the end of the day, why? Because every hand in the UN counts, because the UN is an important arena. So Israel is relating more and more importance. And we also see that Israel is engaging in the UN. And we can see this in the 2016 decision of the UN to appoint Israel's ambassador, Dani Danon, to chair the Sixth Committee, which is an important achievement and something that obviously a lot of effort had been put into that. And the 2015 decision to recognize Yom Kippur as a holiday in the UN. So these are very important achievements, and it shows that Israel is engaged in the UN, and therefore Israel cares about what's happening in the UN, and therefore the UN has legitimacy. Regarding the ICC, we see that it started off with 60 member states. Now it has 123 member states. We know that in addition to what is being investigated or examined or not, it has a motivating effect on states. We know that if we act in a certain way, we may be subject to scrutiny by the ICC. Therefore, we investigate our own problematic conduct. And it can also have a deterrent effect that initially states will just avoid going into specific situations. So to finalize that, I definitely don't see a decline in the legitimization and legitimacy of these international institutions.
That's interesting, but I think maybe one point that maybe might shift a little bit is how much these international institutions will get involved into internal, I think the internal aspects of what's happening in countries. I think the backlash is against this over-internalization of internal affairs.
Yeah.
Not so much their power as such, but more their meddling inside internal issues. And here I wonder if what we see around the world, also in the US, but also in Europe, I think the strengthening of the right or even Brexit in the UK and other kinds of shifts towards maybe less acceptance of this kind of interference maybe might make these international organizations still stay strong, but maybe reconsider how much they interfere in internal affairs of states. And I'm not sure that's a bad direction, although I hope it doesn't go too far, that they stop interfering, because I think they have an important role in making the world going in a good direction, in a better direction. And we must remember that everything started, or let's say, got much more important after the Second World War. Mm-hmm. So there was a rationale here, and we don't want to get back there. But maybe they went a little bit too far here and there, and maybe it's good to also have them re-examine this position. So we can talk much more. There's so much more to say.
Definitely.
But I think our time is up. So thank you, Michal.
I think so too. Thank you. And I think that last point is definitely food for thought. And I would encourage our listeners to log into our website and look for additional podcasts. Thank you.
Thanks.